Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are. My name is Kathleen Newland. I'm a co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., where I direct MPI's program on migration and development. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to this global telephonic briefing on the Global Forum for Migration and Development, which will meet for the seventh time, May 12th through 16th in Stockholm, hosted by the government of Sweden. The first 2 days, May 12th and 13th, are the civil society days of the forum. May 14th, we'll see the formal opening ceremonies, headlined by Crown Princess Victoria of Sweden and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. May 15th and 16th will be the intergovernmental meeting, in which almost 500 delegates from more than 140 countries are expected to participate. If this all sounds rather formal, it's important to remember that the Global Forum on Migration and Development, the GFMD, is distinguished from other multilateral meetings by its informal nature. It's led by the participating states, it produces no binding resolutions or obligations for states, and as such, it has established itself as a safe space for discussions of issues surrounding international migration, which have often proved to be difficult and contentious in more formal settings. Here to discuss the seventh meeting of the Global Forum on Migration and Development, the GFMD, and what we can expect for this meeting and the future of the forum, we are very fortunate to have two people who have been from the very beginning and remain at the center of strategy and preparations for the GFMD. Joining me from Stockholm is Ambassador Eva Åkerman-Borre, who is the leader of the Secretariat for the Swedish Chairmanship of the Global Forum. Eva will guide us through the plans for the forum and what Sweden and other countries hope to accomplish there. After that, Eva will hand over to Gregory Maniatis, who is joining us from New York. Gregory is a senior European policy fellow at the Migration Policy Institute and oversees European programs for MPI. But more relevant for this conversation, he is also senior advisor to Peter Sutherland, the UN Special Representative for Migration, who connects the GFMD and the UN system through his appointment by the Secretary General. So I am now going to hand over to Eva, and Eva, I can't thank you enough for joining us. I know what an incredibly busy period this is for you and your team, so thank you for being with us here this morning.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, and I'm very happy to join this conversation from Stockholm, although we are, as you said, very, very busy preparing for welcoming the whole world to Stockholm to discuss the issues of migration and development. So, as you all know, the Global Forum is an informal, non-binding, and instead-led process. And since its formation after the first high-level dialogue in 2006, it has grown to become a unique and leading forum for governments to exchange experiences, priorities, and concerns in this area of migration and development. And the Global Forum has really influenced and generated lessons learned and built trust among key stakeholders. At the second high-level dialogue last year in October, we saw the results of this work. A declaration was adopted which testifies to a strong common understanding of the importance of migration and development, and the UN Secretary General ascribed much of the progress made to the trust that had been built in the Global Forum. Over the years, states and relevant stakeholders have engaged in constructive dialogue around a broad range of thematic issues like labor migration and mobility, diasporas, remittances, strategies for addressing irregular migration and enabling regular migration, and the rights of migrants, policy coherence and mainstreaming, just to name a few of this broad range of issues. States have come to appreciate the magnitude of migration's contribution to development. Most directly, this happens through higher earning potentials and the hundreds of billions of dollars remitted each year, which are often invested in education, health, housing, but also through filling needs on the labor market, encouraging trade and investment between countries, as well as transferring knowledge, skills, and ideas as transnational networks are formed. At the same time, the current state of governance and policy development on migration exposes migrants to vulnerabilities. Together with their families, migrants bear a heavy burden, including exorbitant fees paid to recruitment middlemen to secure a job, discrimination, rights violations, debt bondage and trafficking, and long separation or breakups of families. In the absence of legal migration opportunities, too many migrants risk their lives and well-being attempting dangerous border crossing. So over the course of the Swedish chairmanship of the GFMD, governments and other stakeholders have shared their experiences of how migrants and migration have been instrumental in achieving the development goals. However, they have equally highlighted the many potential gains from migration that are left on the table due to poor policies. And in order to realize the full potential of mobility and avoid the pitfalls for migrants as well as states, governments have stressed the need for incorporating migration into their own analysis, planning and programming, as well as those of other development actors. Yet, as highlighted by the Secretary General's report for the high-level dialogue of 2013, only a few national development plans do include migration. In the GFMD states, international organizations and civil society actors have stressed that by improving the quality of mobility, we could profoundly improve human development outcomes for migrants, their families, local communities, and countries. So how migration is governed, the conditions under which migrants move, live, and work, will determine what kind of outcomes can be achieved, and thus our mobility to achieve a number of the Sustainable Development Goals. As no country can manage migration alone, this calls for international cooperation and policy coherence. So at the upcoming forum meeting in Stockholm, in just less than 2 weeks' time, some 700 participants from more than 140 countries representing governments, international organizations, and civil society will therefore discuss how migration could be included in the post-2015 development agenda, an issue that Gregory will return to later. But let me just share four recommendations that have been put forward to this effect by the stakeholders in the GFMD process in the discussions that we have held so far during our presidency. First, to recognize migration and migrants as enablers in the narrative of the post-2015 development agenda. Secondly, to include migration-related aspects as targets within a goal on the means of implementation or global partnership for sustainable development. Third, to include targets for the contribution by migrants and migration to other relevant sustainable goals, such as those discussed in the Open Working Group report. And fourth, to disaggregate the reporting on goals, targets, and indicators to account for the development outcome of migrants. So the forum meeting in Stockholm will provide a platform for governments and other stakeholders to discuss these kind of recommendations. I'm sure there will be others as well added to the list. And to send a strong message from Stockholm that migration has a place on the post-2015 agenda. I brought up the issue of including migration in the post-2015 agenda as it's a priority for the Swedish chair, but also since it would encourage governments and other development actors to analyze, plan for, and act upon the opportunities and challenges that migration brings, exactly what I mentioned was the need to do this in a global age of mobility. And this really happens, I think, at the national level. That's very important. I think that's why it has place really in the GFMD as well, because we need to implement these policies and programs at the national level. But migration cannot be handled, as I said earlier, by individual countries alone. It's an international phenomenon that calls for global and region partner partnerships and cooperation. And the GFMD is one such platform. As I started off by saying, a unique and leading such platform for encouraging partnerships and cooperation at a global level. So to close this introduction, I would like to point out that regardless of how migration is included in the post-2015 development agenda, the GFMD will need to engage with this agenda. It will provide an excellent opportunity for governments to meet, exchange experiences of what policies and programs they have put in place to draw on the contributions of migration towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. They will continue to share experiences how we move from words to action when it comes to granting access to social services to migrants to ensure that they are not left behind as we strive towards new development goals. And I think that that is really the essence of the Global Forum and the fora it has become on the global arena. So by that introduction, I would like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Eva. I want to let our listeners know that we would encourage you to join us with your comments and questions. You can tweet your questions to hashtag MPIGFMDcall, or you can email us at communications@migrationpolicy.org. Or if you're joining us via computer, you can use the chat function on your computer. And so we would, after Gregory has spoken and I've given a few additional remarks, we invite you to join this conversation. So Gregory, please, we await your remarks.
Thanks, Kathleen, and thanks, Eva. I should just start by underscoring the truly extraordinary role that Eva has played in leading the forum. I mean, she was a critical force in helping create the forum in 2006, and she has been an energetic and visionary leader as chair over the past 16 months. So I couldn't say enough about her role. In a moment, I'll offer a few words on the deliberations around migration in the post-2015 UN Development Agenda, which is the successor to the Millennium Development Goals. And I'll also touch on one of the more concrete and high-profile projects that have emerged from the forum, which is an initiative on migrants in crisis that's being very ably led by the United States and the Philippines. But before I come to those, I'd like to make a broader point about the forum. 8 years ago, when Peter Sutherland first proposed its creation, it was met with some skepticism, some pretty sharp skepticism in some quarters. The year was 2006, and the global economy was booming. Migration wasn't too much of an issue politically for most governments in the West, at least. Within 2 years of that, the financial crisis had struck. Unemployment skyrocketed, and support for far-right parties, especially in Europe, has risen a lot, and we'll see that in the European Parliament elections at the end of May. All this, you might have thought, would have deflated enthusiasm for a venture like the Global Forum, but it hasn't. The forum, as Eva said, has thrived. There's 140-plus countries that will be represented in Stockholm, and there's also a very vibrant and increasingly well-organized and respected civil society presence in the Global Forum. And I should just say something that hasn't been noted, I think, really by Eva and Kathleen yet, which is that the Global Forum is not a gathering for a week every year. It is a year-long process, and it brings countries together day by day, week by week, often regularly in person in Geneva, but also through working groups that develop the content that will be discussed at the forum in Stockholm. So why has the forum been a success in a very difficult context? I believe it's because it's become established as a safe and a non-contentious space in which to discuss policies and actions that lead to better outcomes for migrants and societies. And the forum hasn't done this by avoiding difficult issues. The question of human rights was contentious at the start of the forum back in 2006-2007, but it relatively quickly became absorbed as a core issue that's regularly on the agenda at the forum. The Domestic Workers Convention, for instance, has been a constant topic of conversation there as well. Most of the policies that the forum analyzes and advances are not ones that pit states against other states or the interests of migrants against the interests of states. They're policies that squeeze out bad actors, like recruiters who exploit migrants, smugglers, employers who abuse them. And by doing that, by developing policies that limit the space in which these bad actors can operate, you return their ill-gotten gains to migrants and to society. As both Ava and Kathleen have said, the forum offers an environment where trust is built based on shared knowledge and strong relationships. And trust is the indispensable ingredient in enabling international cooperation. And it is, in my view, the most valuable product of the forum. You can see this in the way that migration stakeholders have rallied around the issue of the post-2015 UN Development Agenda. It's a prime example of the trust and cooperation the forum has built. At the heart of this is confidence that we have a common understanding of the challenges we face and that we have the knowledge which the forum has helped foster to solve those problems. When the post-2015 debate started in earnest back in 2012, migration barely had a heartbeat in that conversation. The development community was skeptical about migration's place in development. I should say skepticism was not well-founded, but it did run deep, and it still in some quarters runs deep. So in response to that, about 18 months ago, a very dedicated group of states and organizations, agencies, civil society organizations, and experts began working together to understand how to ensure that migration was given full consideration by those deciding the post-2015 agenda. They worked very closely together to build the evidence, to develop the argument, and to organize their advocacy. I should say that the UN Development Program, the IOM, the World Bank have played critical roles in that, as have Switzerland and Sweden, Mexico and Bangladesh, and civil society. The overarching goals that they have are two. First, we want to ensure that the post-2015 development agenda finally frames migration properly, not as the scourge that populists make it out to be, but as the original and still probably best strategy for people who are seeking to escape poverty and mitigate risk and build a better life. In order to do that, we've had to articulate very forcefully the scale of migration's impact on development. Second, we've shown that in order for migrants and societies to reap the development gains of migration, we have to put in place policies that genuinely protect the rights of migrants. No matter how tireless and determined they are, if their hands are tied, migrants cannot contribute the way that they should. So in the language of the post-2015 debate, which is an obscure, arcane language, ancient Greek would be wildly popular compared to it, would like to see a series of targets and indicators related to migration in that agenda. Targets and indicators, for instance, that measure the reduction in the cost of migration, for instance, remittance costs and recruitment costs, and targets and indicators that track whether migrants are given fair treatment in labor markets, in schools, and in the health system. If we manage to do that, if we manage to get those points, or some of those points at least, in the post-2015 agenda, then we believe that there will be greater political and financial resources that will flow to help address those challenges. Where do we stand? Migration, I think, right now is in a far better position than anyone expected even a few months ago, even this past winter. The government group, what Ava referred to as the Open Working Group, that is overseeing the post-2015 debate has now heard from dozens of countries in support of migration. And the main document that is being discussed by this government group now includes numerous references to migration. We were very much helped, I should note, as Ava said, by the declaration, which showed a unified position that came out of the high-level dialogue on migration and development last October at the UN. Nonetheless, there's a year-long battle ahead, and both governments and civil society need to become very forceful and savvy advocates over the course of the next 6 months to maintain the progress that's been made. So that's the post-2013 debate, and I'll close my remarks with just a few words about the Migrants in Crisis Initiative, which also has been made possible by the platform that the GFMD offers and by the relationships that the forum has created. The Crisis Migrants Initiative is led by the U.S. and the Philippines and extremely well led by them, and they've been joined by five other countries in the core working group. Those countries have been working intensely since last autumn and will present their work and their plans for the future at the forum. Their goal is to develop a framework for action on helping migrants caught in acute onset crisis situations, natural disasters like the tsunami in Japan, Hurricane Sandy in the U.S., civil conflict, Libya, Syria. Just to give one example of what I would like to see speaking personally, since I'm not in charge of this, it's the states that are, but would like to see, for instance, during a crisis, for it to become a standard that emergency assistance should be afforded to citizens and migrants alike without discrimination. The government working group has already identified many measures that stakeholders can take before, during, and after crises in order to keep migrants out of harm's way. Countries that are especially experienced, like the Philippines, in protecting their workers abroad, offer many ideas in this respect that could be adopted by others. Destination and neighboring countries also have a very important role to play, for instance, by keeping borders open and not charging for exit visas. Employers are also linchpins. They need to have plans to repatriate foreign workers, not just executives, and include those clauses in standard migrant employment contracts. I think the principles and plans that we could and hopefully will put in place to protect migrants in those kinds of life-threatening situations eventually could and should be expanded in order to protect a much broader array of vulnerable migrants. This initiative is just one example of what I think and hope will be many similar efforts that the forum will continue to spawn, with groups of states and experts and international organizations, civil society working together to trailblaze solutions that can become global standards. So with that, I thank you for listening, and I think, Kathleen, it's you're on deck.
Okay, thank you very much, Gregory, for those really substantive comments. I think it gives us a sense of the kind of things that the Global Forum really is producing. Let me remind our listeners that we would love to hear from you. You can tweet your comment or question to hashtag MPIGFMDcall or email them to communications@migrationpolicy.org or use the chat function on your computer. As Gregory mentioned and Eva has illustrated, the GFMD really has become a very important forum for states and other stakeholders to get together to approach migration problems, issues, and search for solutions. I think there's still some people who lament the fact that there is no World Migration Organization, but states have made it very clear that they're not ready for that, and they may never be ready, but they are not willing to sort of surrender national control over migration to a supranational authority. But those same states have shown that they are willing to collaborate with other states and with civil society organizations and the private sector to address problems and opportunities in migration. And the annual or nearly annual Global Forum has become their venue of choice, the central space where stakeholders can come together, explore new avenues for cooperation, new arenas of common interest. And states and others are also using the GFMD to push forward or gather support for initiatives that originated elsewhere. Gregory has given a couple of examples, like the domestic Workers' Convention, and we could mention several others around issues of recruitment or diaspora engagement that have drawn strength from the forum, used it as an opportunity to build support, and then taken those results to other gatherings of states and other stakeholders outside of the forum. So it's been very much an iterative process of building momentum around common action on migration. You might also say that you can tell, you could almost say that you can tell that a forum has become indispensable when the side meetings and events, the things that take place off the official agenda, become as important as the formal agenda. All around the edges of the forum, we will see groups composed of members of government delegations, civil society groups, migrants, members of diasporas, trade unions, migrant rights advocates, scholars, experts, all kinds of, you know, a mixture of stakeholders gathering to report on or gather support for various initiatives and strategize about how to advance them. So, for example, the World Bank's huge NOMAD initiative, which is gathering data and analysis on international migration, is not formally a part of the Global Forum, but the chairs and co-chairs of that initiative will be meeting at the forum, reporting on results, and sort of taking advantage of the dynamism and the sort of critical mass that assembles at the forum to take their agenda forward. There'll be informal meetings around recruitment, around diaspora initiatives, and as Gregory mentioned, around the Migrants in Countries in Crisis initiative. The GFMD isn't really meant to be, it's not designed to be a decision-making body, but it does produce concrete actions in this way, in this sort of gathering momentum, assembling coalitions, and it has become really, I think, a very important central node of the international debate on migration and development, on the rights of migrants, and on international cooperation around these issues that in the past have been really quite difficult for countries to discuss in a collaborative way. So I think many people led by the Swedish chair have great hopes for this forum. It will be something of a turning point for the forum, coming after a second high-level dialogue at the United Nations, which took place last fall. But I think it has become a sort of indispensable space for this discussion. And I personally am very much looking forward to it, and I know I am not alone in that. So again, many thanks to Gregory and Eva for their remarks. And now we look forward to your questions and comments. Again, you can tweet us at hashtag MPIGFMDcall or email us at communications@migrationpolicy.org or use the chat function on your computer. And let me give you the first question. And members of the audience, please don't be shy about sending us your comments as well. From Sonia Michael, we have the question, to what extent have or will GFMD participants consider the impact of maternal migration on families, and especially the relationship between maternal absence and the Millennium Development Goals, like improving education, especially of girls, health, nutrition, etc.? Have they considered how immigration restrictions prevent family members from joining migrant mothers, for example, and to what extent have sending countries been able to compensate for the caring work of absent mothers when it comes to elders as well as children? Well, I know from some of the meetings, the preparatory meetings for the GFMD that I've been in, that there has been a great deal of concern about family separation as a result of migration. But Eva, can you give us some indication of how those issues of family separation, particularly separation of families from their mothers, will be addressed at the forum?
Yes, thank you very much, Kathleen. Actually, the way that the agenda has been set for this edition of the Global Forum, if you like, is that we have one work stream that looks at the integration of migration in global, regional, and national development agendas on issues of coherence and so on, and also a second work stream that looks at migration as an enabler for inclusive economic development, and then the third strand that looks at migration as an enabler for inclusive social development. And I think that maybe it's in the round table work stream three where we have issues that that this question evolves around most prominently when we're looking at what migration actually does to enable inclusive social development. And issues of mobility that creates health and education outcomes is one of the two priorities of this discussion. And of course, I mean, the negative sides, vulnerabilities of migrants are, and especially women migrants, are addressed in these two work streams as well. But we have tried, and I hope that it does not sound like we are too naively optimistic about the issues. We have tried to see the challenges that this type of migration brings, but mostly this time around focus on the positive development outcomes and see how they can be harnessed in a way. And I know that sometimes I get the question, I mean, don't you think you're speaking about this as something that is too positive when we have all these negative outcomes? But I think that it's a balance between these agendas that we are trying to create in this discussion. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Eva. Yes, I mean, I think this question of family separation is a difficult one for governments to address because migrants make their own choices, often have to make the best of a limited set of choices that they have, whether to remain at home with their families or migrate in the hopes of bringing their families more opportunities for education, as our questioner identified. And, you know, we know that one of the main uses of migrants' remittances is indeed to send children to school, to pay for health care, and so on. So these are trade-offs, often very difficult trade-offs that migrants make. And I think, you know, we have to respect our choices while trying to enlarge the range of choices that they have. Let's move on to a second question. One of the real evolutions that we have seen in the Global Forum is in the relations between civil society and the governments that participate. I myself have attended every Global Forum from the first one in Brussels in 2007 through all of the other five, and looking forward to Stockholm. And what used to be quite a contentious relationship between the civil society participants in the forum seems to have become a much more collaborative one. And perhaps I can turn this question to Gregory to give us some thoughts about how this evolution has occurred. Has it been around specific subjects? Has it been a result of compromise or just a recognition of common interests?
It's a really good question, Kathleen. I think one of the real successes of this forum is that it has brought governments and civil society together in a very productive way. Why that happened, I think, is, and it happened gradually through regular exposure, conversation at the forum and inside events and during the year at the Friends of the Forum meetings in Geneva. I think basically two things happened. One is that governments, when they really had a chance to work with civil society, and many governments do an excellent job of working with civil society at the national level, really understood that the NGOs play a critical role in migration-related activities on the ground. They are the ones who are in direct contact with migrants and refugees, asylum seekers who, you know, are facing challenges, and they understand what those challenges are better than governments, who are generally isolated in their in their offices, and they're a conveyor belt of information about what is going on. Equally, they're a conveyor belt of information about whether government policies to address those challenges are working or not. I think the governments have come to respect when it comes to global issues and international issues that are discussed at the global forum, really respect the knowledge and the contribution of civil society. That has been made possible by a shift, I think, in civil society's own engagement, which I think in the early days of the forum tended to be much more political in that what they would say would be really sort of demands largely from governments, of governments, about what they should do. Gradually, that rhetoric has evolved to really understand that they need to not only express what governments should do, but how they should do it, and that the recommendations for how governments should change policies is informed by the knowledge that NGOs have on the ground, which is oftentimes, as I said, very unique. So I think that the bridging between the two has happened because of that. I should also say that there have been certain foundations and individuals who really have played a critical role in this. I think the MacArthur Foundation made it its goal to create an activist group of civil society representatives and organizations to help complement the government side of the Global Forum and played a very important role. The ICMC in Geneva has played a pivotal role, Migrants Rights International, and several others. So I think that the actions of individuals have made a very big impact on us.
Yes, and I think what one of the most concrete manifestation of that in the Global Forum has been what's called the sort of common space, which initially in the first couple of Global Forums was just a sort of hour or two of government and civil society members sort of talking at each other, not in a very constructive way, to a very different model now. And Eva, can you say something about what the common space in Stockholm is going to look like?
Yes, thank you, Kathleen. And just to maybe also compliment what has been said by you two, Gregory and yourself about the role of the Global Forum in creating a better dialogue between governments and civil society. I, of course, agree with you there, but I think that the Global Forum has been able to be flexible in a way that it has met many different needs. And actually, something that I like to point out is that there was a very strong need only between states to have this conversation, because the trust between states was not there 10 years ago or even 5-6 years ago, and it has filled a very important role there. And also, of course, in discussions with the Global Migration Group organizations, I think it's also been very important. So many different actors have been able to come together and increase trust, but also to discuss the agenda setting and to agree on what is priority and not. And it's amazing how that has converged over time. And I'm not sure that I can say attribute this to the work that we have done in the common space, but at least the common space is a place where all these actors can come together. And I think in Stockholm we will be more than 700 people meeting together in the common space to actually discuss these issues that we have as a follow-up of the high-level dialogue, but also as a follow-up of the dialogue we've had in the global forum in different types of constellations, been able to identify together as these are the issues that we want to have on the agenda. These are the issues that are the most important. We want to look together on the post-2015 development agenda. We want to look at mobility, decent jobs, rights for migrants, and so on, together to set the agenda for how we are going to work together. The states, the international organizations can also, of course, immediately know what the states want to discuss because they sit there together with them, and the civil society actors also then have direct influence on what we're discussing together. So I think that this dynamism, I'm looking very much forward, and Sweden has made the common space the centerpiece of our global forum this time, and I think that this is a progress that has been gradual over time, and as I said, I'm really looking very much forward to this discussion.
Yes, I think the common space has really become more and more central to the forum, and I think that the way you have set it up as a bridge between the civil society and the government days is a very sort of constructive formulation. I think we have time for just one more question, and the question that has come in is this one. How will the GFMD deal with the concerns of countries of origin about the immigration of their people, especially their highly skilled people? So the questioner goes on to say, are the transnational ties of diasporas to their countries of origin enough to compensate countries for a perceived loss of their investment in human capital? Eva, would you like to tell us how that is being dealt with in the agenda of the GFMD?
Thank you very much. That's a huge question. So I will not pretend to be able to answer it in any detail, but I think that this issue is really at the center of discussions in the global forum, not only during the Swedish chair, but it has been over time. And of course, the mobility of skills and competences and the global competition for talent is one side of this issue, and that is the centerpiece of the discussion this time as well, how to look at a better way in terms of migration policies to allow for facilitated mobility, to allow for more circular mobility, for people to move back and forth, so that also countries of origin can see the return of some of the people that have left, but maybe not all, but temporary movement and so on. But there is also a whole large discussion on diasporas, of course, and how diasporas can influence the development of their countries of origin by different types of activities, development activities, but also circulation of knowledge and competence and retaining the ties, helping, and this is the focus of the discussion in Stockholm when it comes to diasporas, to improve trade and investment between countries of origin and destination. So I think that there are a lot of issues there that sort of amount to this, or have seen the development of the discussion on what was maybe formally labeled the brain drain challenge, but has now been sort of branched out to cover a lot of different sets of the programs and measures that are discussed. Thank you.
Yes, I think that really is an evolution that I too have observed in the discussions over these last 7 or 8 years, from looking at migration as a sort of loss to the country of origin to looking at the potential gains as countries make more of an effort to really involve their diasporas in development efforts. We are rapidly running out of time. Gregory, do you have a last word before we close?
I just wanted to thank also Turkey, which is, I think, taking over the forum from Sweden and is going to, I think, bring another dimension to the global forum debate. So the global forum in 2015 will be in Istanbul. And I think we have that to look forward to. But first we go to Stockholm, and I'm sure it will be an exceptionally good forum.
I am certainly looking forward to it myself, and I know that hundreds of people who will be there and many more who will be following it from a distance are also looking forward to it. For those of you who are interested in delving more deeply into some of the issues that will be discussed at the forum website is gfmd.org, and there are a number of policy briefs on the Migration Policy Institute website that are relevant to the forum issues. If you go to www.migrationpolicy.org, we have one series of briefs on what we know about migration and development, and another series co-sponsored by MPI with the International Organization for Migration that focuses on migration issues in Asia. Gregory and Eva, thank you so much for joining us for this call, and we wish you the best of luck in these final hectic days of preparation for the forum, and look forward to seeing you in Stockholm. Thank you all who joined us on this call, and please stay tuned to the Migration Policy Institute. Goodbye.
For more information, visit the Migration Policy Institute at www.migrationpolicy.org.